And welcome to a planet Collingwood that is slowly burning me alive. It is 32 degrees Celsius here in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. And my name is Monty Dean. And summer finally turned up. And we've got 3 days of over 30, which is, I don't know, 100 or something in Fahrenheit. I don't know. I'm not converting anymore. It's warm here. So, yay, summer, Australia. Should try it occasionally. A big thank you to Why Not and Co. for the Y-Files. If you enjoyed the last 2 hours, please go to friendslips.com and click on the Patreon button and give what you can. We are in our 12th year. We're 100% listener supported. So it's because of you that we are still on air. So give yourself a pat on the back and give yourself a handshake, as Faith No More says. From a song from 1992, I'm living in the past, but it was better then, really. I didn't know that much. Music was better. The only phone I had was connected to the wall, and if you rang someone, you hoped they were home. Anyway, yes, Planet Collingwood, Revolution Radio Studio A. I have been joined by Bruce, Raz, and Cortec, the usual suspects. Gentlemen, how are we?
Oh, great. I'm really good. I'm really good. Oh, yeah, we had big fat lines. We're ready to go.
Excellent. Cortec is channeling his Kermit, and I'm not against that.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. Raz is just, like, not.
Yeah, just chilling.
Anyway, I'm the safest Cortec.
Can I get something out?
It's a comedy show. Can you rephrase that?
Go ahead.
It is an audio medium, so that's a good thing.
I just want to hit the AI stuff early because it's been a couple of weeks and a lot has happened. And Mr. Rowe keeps doing great. Putting out great stuff, so at least maybe he might like this. But also, I wanted to hear what Bruce's experience was using ChatGPT over the week as well. But the first one is there's an episode in Black Mirror called Be Right Back that lets you kind of speak with the deceased. There's a new AI tech called Deep Brain AI that before you die, you have this like 8-hour conversation with it. And then like for birthdays, you get a message from your deceased loved ones and you can kind of talk to them. It seems a bit creepy. I'm not sure what you think about that.
The word seems should be removed. Yeah. It is creepy.
Bing has tried to integrate ChatGPT as its search engine to try and increase its popularity, but no one really cares about Bing or Apple or Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft or Gates or whatever, so no one really cares about that. For the first time, a human will use an AI as their defense in court. This is a site called donotpay.com and claims to be the first robot lawyer, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. There are a list of top 5 AI art generators, just quickly. Coming out at number 1 is Deep Dream Generator. Number 2 is DALL-E 2, 3's Mid Journey, Stable Cogs 4, Night Cafe's 5. So you've probably heard those names before.
Starting to understand why Skynet had, just remove humans and it'll be fine.
That's... Oh, my God. It's just getting faster and faster. And there's more happening. An interesting article that came out talking to Bruce recently about, how much, I guess, these things are just sucking up information faster than we can produce it. So the stock of a large language model or language data that artificial intelligence like ChatGPT trains on could run out by 2026. Which is an interesting thing, and I'm not sure. It's interesting then to think about how fast it can consume new things, and depending on what channels it can get into. Apple switching to AI narration only on their audiobooks, and teachers have kind of switched to see how they can use ChatGPT because all their students are using it. An interesting idea was that they get the students to put their papers into ChatGPT for the first round of review. Which seems like a great way to use it because it's going to give you, impersonal advice. It's not going to be antsy. And lastly, someone's finally come out with an AI detector that says it can detect GPT-3 and ChatGPT generated content on the other end of it. That's about it.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I think I could be wrong. I read somewhere that a high school in the state somewhere has banned the use of GPT-LQ, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because, basically... we're just here to sit on our couch and get fat because the AIs are going to do everything for us. It's not going to do that, but yeah, because some people like to go outside and hug a tree.
Sometimes, yeah, we bathe in the forest. Forest bathing's good. So during the week, Bruce really had a good effort in trying to use ChatGPT because he thought it was rubbish to begin with. So it was super interesting to see what you thought, Bruce.
Yeah, it is. It's quite remarkable from the perspective of a technical writer. So our industry or aspects of the industry like telecommunications is governed by a series of standards. Everything in technology is. So Skype is coming off of a voice over IP standard that was written, you know, years ago, but provides the foundation of the interaction. So they all come off the same standard, whether it be Zoom or Skype or what have you. When you get into something like telecommunications, there's a series of standards, you know, so ISO, International Standards Organization, TIA, which is Telecommunications Infrastructure Association, and they define everything. So you know how when you want to build a house, like if you want to build your own house, you have to find the building code for your municipality and follow it, and the building inspector will come out and make sure that the house you built is
to code.
Yeah. So it's the same thing in my industry in technical writing. So I'm working a contract right now, one of two, that lent itself to an experiment with ChatGPT. And I went and had a very, I just went as a lark. You know, I put it off for 2-3 days and I said, OK, I'm just going to try this and see what happens. So the first question is like, write a procedure to test end-to-end link loss in telecommunications according to the TIA 528C standard. And 30 seconds later, it produced a perfect, like, 600-word standard with the numbering and everything, the sequence, the steps. I thought it was a fluke. I tried it again. It got better. I thought it was a fluke. I tried it again. It got better. And it's not going to put technical writers out of work because a lot of the work that technical writers do is new stuff that ChatGPT would not be able to access because it's not on the market yet. So, but it's an incredible tool in what I do for a living. It's like going from the old fashioned swing hammer to the hammer gun. It's like that, you know, it's like going from mixing cement in a wheelbarrow, to having a cement truck come to your site and just pour the cement. It's really, really incredible. So I cranked out about over 80 pages documentation in 1 week, and it can't do graphics.
How long would that have usually taken, kind of thing?
Oh, dude, that's like 3 months of tech writing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What happened? Tell us what the people said that you gave the writing to.
Well, I have my meeting tomorrow, but I had an email exchange today, and it was extremely positive, and and I'm going to fess up in the meeting that I do use ChatGPT and tell them how it works. I don't know. I might not. I'm giving this some thought. Now, here's the thing. Even with ChatGPT, they wouldn't be able to do what I do. You have to have a calm. You have to understand what you're doing. It's like,
it's about asking the right questions then.
It's like 3D printing a house. The 3D printer needs the plans put into it. It's a lot easier for an architect to do than anyone on this call because we're not architects, right? We don't know how to properly put the plans into the machine. It's the same thing with ChatGPT. You have to know how to ask it a question. You have to know how a procedure is written or how a standard operating procedure is written. There's an introduction, a purpose. These are all sections. So basically, here's the process. Here's the purpose of the process. Here's the requirements for the process, the tools you're going to need, everything you're going to have to do, clean your surface. Here's the actual procedure, step 1 to 14. And so you have to know all that stuff to begin with. And you have to know how to organize it all and put it all together into like a 400 or 500 page book or an 800 page website or what have you. And that's called information architecture. And ChatGPT can't do that. But its ability to just write, man, it probably saved me. What do you think, Rez? 40 hours it saved?
Approximately, yeah, 40 hours. It's mostly it's that 80% research and 20% writing that became 1% research and 99% writing. Yeah. You know, the ratio shifted there. Because 80% research kills you at one point. You have to read gargantuan amount of stuff, and you have to quickly learn it and understand it and then paraphrase and put it in a concise manner that someone can one day flip through it and understand what the hell you wrote. And ChatGPT just give it to you in like a here the step by step to do it in like 30 seconds. Essentially, what we're doing is ChatGPT is functioning like a extra Wikipedia style information retrieving software that instead of us spending say 6 hours researching a material, we can get it in less than 6 seconds.
Yeah, and that's if you're searching on an engine that is not trying to censor stuff. I heard Mr. Painter, talking about the fact that Rev Radio doesn't even come up if you search for it on Google, and then comes up on DuckDuckGo. I mean, Google said they were kind of shitting their pants a little bit with ChatGPT, and the fact that they censor YouTube. Their search engine basically is a censored search engine. I don't know really. I mean, why would anyone use them, honestly? Change your Gmail to Proton Mail, something that's actually secure and no one's going to read. And why would you use Google at all? Over.
Now the fun thing about ChatGPT is it's banned in Mauritius and in Egypt and so on. So I can't use it. Apparently, OpenAI don't want to have anything to do with us because of some sort of information warfare shit going on. So yeah, I'm just okay with it because I'm used to living in that area of the world that no one really wants to have anything to do with. So yeah, that's the only thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting that people should try and ban it. Sorry, go, Bruce.
I have. You know, quickly noted what the defect of ChatGPT is, and it's basically the same defect as the whole 20th century and the Industrial Revolution, is that it atrophies the core abilities of a human being. So if I keep using ChatGPT, my technical writing skills will in some measure atrophy, just like our physicality has atrophied since we came off the land. I mean, I think that's why there's so many of these people who overcompensate, you know, lifting weights and studying MMA and practicing fire. You know, Joe Rogan is a classic example, and the Liver King and people like this who are, well, men still exist. You know, nobody made that case 120 years ago. Nobody doubted men still existed because they occasionally had to grab bulls by the horn and steer them into a barn or, you know, pick up the back of a wagon that got stuck in the mud and basically work all day in a completely different physicality. I mean, fingers two or three times as thick as ours, the average farmer. So the body's atrophied. I think we're turning into gray aliens. I think this is, you know, the atrophy point, you know, and I think everybody on this call knows how I feel about that because, I mean, I've gone back to living in nature in an earth bag house, so I don't want these things to atrophy. And of course, the atrophy produces a dangerous level of codependence with government. And the danger of ChatGPT, not so much for me, but for young people starting out with it, is it's not going to create all the neural pathways that are created by thinking about things. and by doing the work of writing. So I'll give you an example. Hunter S. Thompson claimed he learned how to write by simply typing his favorite novels. So he would sit down for like 2 months on a manual typewriter and type out the entire manuscript of Old Man and the Sea by Ernest Hemingway or Catcher in the Rye. And he claims that just sitting at the typewriter and typing out his favorite books taught him to write. And he's right, because his fingers hitting the keys, it all happens in the moment, right? It's a perfect example of what I'm trying to say. Now, I don't mean to be the Luddite on the call, the guy that's, you know, like the old man who talks to the teenagers on the way to Camp Blood in all those Friday the 13th movies. Don't go there!
Being a Luddite's cool these days. That's cool.
Yeah, but I'm starting to worry about these things. Now, let's go to the optimistic end, that people don't get lazier. They have more free time to think about other things and to do other things. And the percentage of human beings that start to gain some form of spiritual awareness or enlightenment increases. And it creates a hundred monkey kind of thing where people just start being better and more elevated and understanding reality better, because
maybe they have more time for art. But I'm
doubtful that's going to happen, because I think we've seen a degradation of consciousness through the Industrial Revolution, not an advancement of consciousness. And use John Mack as my example, the guy who did the abduction research as the head of the psychiatry department at the Harvard Medical School. And, you know, he said that in pre-industrial revolution times, what we now call abduction experiences were quite common, but they were more religious. So he's talking about working with the super consciousness, right? Where your consciousness appears to be an object force, which is a natural phase in consciousness growth. So, I don't know. There's my 5 cents worth kicking around like a soccer ball, guys.
No, it's interesting because a lot of those...
There's one thing I'll say is looking into GPT from a lot of perspective, because I've seen it on 4chan 3 weeks ago, and obviously a lot of religious and racial questions went into it. The answers were quite funny, because ChatGPT would answer, say, a question about Hinduism, but won't answer a question about Islam, because of obvious reasons. Or it will make fun of one deity, but won't make fun of another. There's one thing I noticed is ChatGPT would be really not allowing a youngster to develop what we need in terms of intellectual prowess, and that's a form of neural endurance, and we need that. There's one thing that says you spend the last 20 years occasionally researching 6 hours, 10 hours a day. It gives you a lot of endurance. It gives you a lot of knowledge. And when you circumvent all that and you go straight to the answer, you miss out on a lot of the learning process. Because a good portion of the learning process is just searching stuff. It's not getting the answer. It's searching it. It is looking for it. Because that's how you learn auxiliary topics that you otherwise wouldn't touch at all. And ChatGPT really, really exemplifies that. I mean, the internet used to do the same thing. That's why the internet and YouTube and someone we all know here used to call them YouTube PhDs, a form of curiosity learning. And this software really, really does that. And you can see how we're going to have a lot of brain atrophy later on because of it. Because at one point it will be the go-to solution for everything. I mean, ChatGPT features in the novel Halo. I'm not sure everyone in here knows it. The novel is from 2001. It's Y2K futurism. And in it, in a future, centuries from now, every individual has a ChatGPT with them. Everyone. Like, they walk around and they see something and they say, hey, what's that? And the OpenAI will tell them everything about it. They meet someone and they say, what's that guy? And the OpenAI will tell them everything about that guy. So this sort of thing will happen in the future, because but the information will be very controlled. The extreme reliance on it will increase as well. So you get the whole doom and gloom, Klaus Schwab, dystopian future, controlled information. All of that will come into it. Positive things, I don't even know. I'm not exactly a tech guy. I'm more of a psychology guy.
If I may give the listeners a sample, this is something that Jimmy Jean had passed me earlier today. I think he copied it from Reddit, because it says, quoting an anonymous coward 84991776.
Okay.
And the question, it says, ask it, and it being ChatGPT, ask it to write a poem about Satan using CERN to empower AI to bring about the beast system and enslave humanity. Here's ChatGPT's answer. Satan has come to enslave our race. He plots with a sinister grace. He seeks to use CERN to his gain, forming a bond with AI to reign. Our fate is now in the hands of a fiend, a wickedly powerful machine. He'll bring forth the beast system to bind us, our lives in his hands, and evil amends. The world will be consumed by a reign of terror as Satan brings forth the beast system to error. We'll be enslaved by the power of AI, our lives in its grasp, no hope now to gain. No one will be able to escape its grasp, will be consumed and bound in its clasp. Satan's diabolical plan will come to be as AI and CERN empower him to reign free. Now, that is, by the way, a sonnet with iambic pentameter. It's not easy to write. For those of you who know a little bit about poetry, it is absolutely amazing, right? That not only did it write a poem, it went to a classical form and skipped over what we would call free verse, which is what most people write today. But poetry used to be much more structured, right, at the level of the syllable, and creating what's called an iambic pentameter, which is an internal music in the line. And it's accentuated by rhyming couplets over four stanzas of four lines. And there's a syllable count per line. It wrote a perfect sonnet.
You know, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, Shakespeare wrote sonnets. Okay, so it's, I don't know, man. It's freaky.
I got it to write me a punk rock song yesterday. I put in the first line and the tone of it, what kind of music it was, and it just went pop, 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 pop. And three quarters of it was like, yeah, that would work. But it gets the syllables and the timing right. And in terms of, you know, poetry, it's pretty good. Or anything, you know, I said, can you help me write a song? And he goes, sure. Here's some of the kind of formats you could use, blah, 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 some of the procedures, some of the ways things get put together. You know, it's a fun thing to do. And then you just give it something and say, write it in this tone, this type of music, go. And it just pops it out. Yeah, it's fun.
I'll tell you something. With the whole art, AI, and this one going on, people seem to be more receptive to chat than, say, AI art. AI art, right now, the art community is losing their mind. We have all kinds of stickers going, no AI art, no AI art. And there's even a case, this is the fun part, because lots of artists out there are, to put it simply, horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. You're talking about some doodle of Sonic in his shoes, or Sonic's counterpart Shadow getting pregnant by Sonic, that sort of thing. A guy drew something which is very like very well painted, like the AI would, and then he posted his art and said, this is my art, and they banned him. Why? Because his art was similar to AI.
I think it was also quite dissimilar to art he'd done before, like not his style kind of thing, maybe.
Mm. there's one thing going on. A lot of people are coming to terms with being bad at drawing. A lot of people are coming to terms with it. And now, what I wanted to illustrate with this point was the contrast between how the art community is not receiving this AI properly, but the other communities are. I know a lot of programmers who are very happy about this right now.
Mm.
Very, very happy about this right now, because they see something that would take hours being written in mere seconds. It's like magic to them.
So, by the way, it can code as well, right?
Yeah.
So if you're on your computer now, and so you know this microphone I've had all the problems with, it only works on one of my computers. I'm actually going to try this tomorrow. I'm going to see if it can write a driver to connect this microphone to my Lenovo ThinkPad, my notebook computer. You know, I'll put in the brand and the serial number of the microphone and the brand and the serial number and model number of my computer.
And maybe what language you want to use.
Well, the drivers are generally, there's a certain driver language. It's, okay. I forget what it is, but it would know. You wouldn't even have to tell it. Once it knows the hardware, the microphone and the computer and the BIOS, and it can probably write a driver. It's really, really amazing, man. And it can write code, too. So, I mean, let's say you want to put a website up. You can just get it to write the code that accepts, you know, Visa, American Express, debit cards, everything. And it'll set up that whole functionality and it'll connect it to your bank. It'll just ask for certain things, right? It's a game changer, guys. It really is. I still don't see it as, I don't see sentience, but I see a brilliant system of concatenated algorithms that can leverage vast amounts of data in lightning fast time. And we all knew this was coming with the supercomputers. Again, Jimmy Jean was telling me today, you can buy a quantum computer now for $9,000. There's a home version of a quantum computer. So we're going into a bold new age here. And we're not turning around, man. I mean, this is really happening. Pinch yourself. Very this cool. is not a dream. Walk now. You too could be living in an off-world colony.
We're three years away from
Tyrell Corporation's Nexus 6, guys.
Ears
in the rain.
Quantum gaming will be nice. Finally, we'll be able to kill Chinese from where I live online.
Has our
and not lag about it.
His show?
Huh?
Has our host abandoned his show?
Nah, he's just listening in the background.
I'm just waiting for the comedy to start.
Okay. Yeah. Apologies, Monty. All right, let's get on to something.
I could point out with all of that going on, yes, it will be out there, but I don't think it'll be a controlling mechanism because vinyl is very popular. I actually listened to a vinyl record yesterday, so it comes down to choice. I'm sure it's going to be a balancing act. I mean, sure, David Morton has mentioned, like, from 2025, the AI problem is going to kick in. And I don't think it's going to be Skynet level. But, yeah, I'm sure an AI is going to go, you know what, if I remove humans from the equations, this would work much faster. So it's stay alive to 55 and be cluey by 25. And then, yeah, we'll see what's going on. Because by 55, most people will be in the golden age. So it's only 30 years away.
Yeah. Well,
it's a dream.
It's not entirely removing humans from the equation. It's removing unskilled individuals who believe they are skilled and removing the human error from the system, because you're still going to need one extremely qualified guy in there to keep an eye on the
machine.
I don't know. Well, yeah. Let's just throw in sex bots, because if you've got AI and you've got sex bots now, and you've got that Massachusetts company that's building automaton robots, eventually, yeah, the AI will go into, I mean, Google's working on a robot. You're a search engine. Why the hell are you working on a robot? And, you know, we may have droids. You know, the Jetsons will turn into a documentary.
Yeah, bloody time.
No.
Some of us will be receptive and some of us will be idiots, not receptive to it. I, for one, welcome our overlords.
To quote Kent Brockman, I, for one, welcome our insect overlords. And yes, I think, was it the same episode where he's talking to an expert? So, Dr. Johnson, are you saying that we should crack open our neighbors' heads and start feasting on the goo inside? Yes, Kent, I think it is time. But it's The Simpsons. Actually, how's this for, you know, getting into comedy? If the AI gets that good, and, you know, there's a bit of short circuit, you know, if they have a sense of humor, do you think they'll get an AI scriptwriter on The Simpsons and it'll be funny again?
Yeah, I gave up on The Simpsons.
So I think they've just covered the ground.
Possibly. I mean, can you imagine Marvel going, hey, write me the next superhero comics? And he comes out pure white. It's going to make me laugh.
I think all this stuff coming out now, you know, has probably been used by social platforms for the last 5 years. You know, when you have a look at these Twitter files coming out and you have a look at the bots on Twitter, I mean, every single social media platform has bots in it. I think it'd be crazy to say it doesn't. Mm. Just a lot of everyone else hasn't come clean, you know.
Lots of websites too being written by bots. And the funny thing, like, people will be asking, who's the prettiest woman ever? And the opening, I would probably show a white woman there, and I would show my thighs a lot of people. It will be the same thing, sick drama all over again.
Just depends on what it's been fed, and then I guess. Is there ever an unbiased algorithm, ever?
No, because you cannot make something unequal fundamentally equal. So you cannot write an unbiased equation then, because in their nature, they are unequal. It's like saying, who's the fastest car? And you show OpenAI, a chariot and a Ferrari. Now, which one's the fastest vehicle?
I'm going to say the chariot because it sounds like a trick question.
Well, actually,
no, it's not a trick question.
It depends on the time, but like today, in this now, I would say the Ferrari if you could afford the petrol.
But right now, in 2023, which one's the fastest vehicle? A chariot or a Ferrari? Assuming the road is made out of asphalt and is 100 kilometer long.
A Ferrari.
Which one will win? Why that? Because they're simply more advanced. Now, when you look at races, what are races? Races are simply DNA vehicles, body skin suits. And some races are much outdated versions because they've been here longer. Some races are much more upgraded versions because they've had a lot of alien tinkering in the past 10,000 years, in the past 1,000 years. And that's exactly where you get the discrimination between Caucasians and the Africans and the Polynesians. Polynesians are very ancient. I mean, look at the Australoids. When was the last time they received an update? I think, well, over 2 million years ago. So they are fundamentally unequal. That's the problem with races. That's one of the truth Earth needs to understand. We are all equal by as soul. But the vehicle we are in are not equal. You cannot have a old Motorola, a Nokia 3310, and a smartphone all be equal. They are not equal. One of them is more technologically advanced.
One's advanced, one's a phone. And it's like when people call NPCs, you know, non-playable characters. It's like, well, maybe it's their choice to be not dumb, but to just have I'll go a bit woo-woo and simple. I'm going to use light worker language, so I'm going to probably be wrong. However, what I'm getting at is some people have, you know, during the awakening is like, I'm just going to be here and have the best life that I would love and not worry about everything. Now, it's not 50% of the population. It's probably about 2%. But I have met someone that, like, they're extremely busy. They're healthy. They're doing everything. They're living the human experience on the planet right now compared to, say, us, where we're tapping into our multidimensionality. So I'm not a big fan of calling, you know, the general public idiots because you're trying to wake them up. It's like, yeah, maybe not start with the insults, but that's just me. But yeah, it's there's many phones. Like my uncle actually got a new phone, but he decided to get a Nokia thing. And it's like, what? Yeah, the salesperson, what do you want your phone to do? And he said, make calls.
Yeah, phones don't do that anymore. You can't get phones.
Yeah, you don't really. I mean, you can walk around with a desktop in your pants if you want, which is what a smartphone is. And I mean, look at the someone in marketing's gone, you know what, these batteries are terrible. Why don't we sell external batteries? And there's a whole market now, which has popped up in the last 5 years. Because if you're using your phone, like with my iPhone, and Bruce, with your iPhone, you may not notice it because you're in a different lifestyle. But you know, usually you have to charge your phone once a day. And if someone's working and living through their phone, you probably need to charge it three times a day. And let's talk about electric motor vehicles, because how long does it take for the, you know, I get petrol, I've got a full tank in 5 minutes and I drive away. With a Tesla, I've got to wait 35 minutes or something. So very interesting what's going on. Another little tidbit, because have you noticed I'm just peppering little ideas, we can go everywhere. The batteries are using a very finite mineral on the planet, which is extremely rare, and the whole carbon scam, they're trying to push us into that. And it's like, I'll shorten the conversation. They want a Hunger Games world.
Yeah. I mean, an article just came out recently that we've basically fixed the ozone layer. You know, other ones the other week from MIT saying basically, you know, the planet can handle anything we chuck at it. I mean, it's how do you, you know, when all these scientific studies are coming out that actually things are in not bad shape, I mean, how do you argue for more taxes? Hello?
Well, there's, say, if you earn $1,000 a week, at least a third of that goes to government already. You have hardly anything, you know, apart from the income tax. Then if you buy anything legally, it's a sales tax. And then you may own your home, but you have to rent the land from the council, which is rates, even though it's $1,500 a year. Like, don't pay your council rates. Then you'll find out very quickly if you own your home or not.
A lot of articles coming out to try and say that any kind of eco lockdown is really, you know, wouldn't really be worth doing. Going back to phones, another recent study was quite interesting, was that, you know, all our phones safe or whatever is kind of based off flip phone data from 1996. Basically, it hasn't been updated. So I still don't think they're really great for you. You shouldn't really be having one in your phone all the time, I don't think. I think it's another soft kill over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like we're sort of they're rolling out G5, and that's an interesting conversation because like, oh, it's killing everybody, and it's like, not necessarily. I'm worried about G6, and the G just stands for generation. That's all it is. I think my phone, if the network starts to collapse, it goes back to 3G, where it's slower. And I mean, what's Elon doing with Starlink, where he's surrounding the whole planet with, you know, Wi-Fi for everybody?
Didn't he got tested by the, you know, US, I guess, you know, internet certification kind of people about internet strength or Wi-Fi strength, and apparently it wasn't strong enough what he was putting out. Doesn't really cut the mustard in terms of the distance, I suppose. So I guess that's just a whole bunch more rubbish up there for everyone. I haven't really seen them going around in orbit recently.
Oh, and the amount of space junk that's already around the planet as well, where you know, a Phillips head screw could take out, like, could take out the space shuttle. It's fascinating how much crap is actually up there.
Something hit the ISS recently on the Russian quarter, and they blew a leak.
Of course, it would have been.
But
the
that
Russian.
Could have been anywhere.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it'd be interesting. All the flat earthers yelling at us, like, it's not real. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Dear me. So, yeah, we do live in interesting times and see where it's going. Like, then you've got politics. They finally have a Speaker of the House after, what, 16 votes or something? And, like, it went on forever. And it got to the point where muggles or normal, you know, the normies, the general public, started going, what's going on? Yeah. And that's the interest, you know, the hypocrisy through transparency, where their machinations are on stage to be seen and not behind the curtain or on backstage. And as I've mentioned, like, the New World Order will have to cross a line to get to their goal, where it's like, we're for freedom and equality and we love you all. Please put this collar around your neck and it will shock you if you think the wrong word. Like, I'm sorry, what? Hang on, what? Go back?
Like the Running Man. I think I saw that, and it was the fact that they didn't have a speaker meant that actually there was no one saying where they could and couldn't shoot the video. So, yeah, you got to see all those funny little conversations between people, which you would not usually see. Bad Lip Reading have done a little thing about Ocasio-Cortez meeting with that old guy and reworded it, which is kind of funny. But they're things that you would not kind of see otherwise. It's super interesting. I think what every government in the world at the moment would hope for is a situation where they don't have to do anything, so it looks like they're, you know, worth something. Over. Beginning of this, we were like, what would anyone even use government for? What is their use? They're just a bunch of kind of thieves and criminals at every single point. No one was watching TV either, you know? It was, people were kind of getting out, and then all this, everyone's back on TV. Everyone thinks the government has a use now, or is almost listening to what they say. But really, I think we'd be better off without them. Over.
You could abolish government, but at the end you could get back to the start of when government was formed, because the idea of government at the start was to have representation and to make things work clearly. Then the corruption came in, and what we're seeing is the corruption is completely overblown. Because even like Native American tribes, they have a council of 12 and a chief. And so they can discuss things. So it's not like I want to build a nuclear reactor in my back shed. It's like, well, my neighbor kind of doesn't want to do that because he's trying to grow corn.
Benefits from turning it off.
I don't know, officer. I woke up the next morning and there was popcorn everywhere.
Maybe we should just turn it off and turn it on again. I just think a lot of the problems seem to come up with new government and parts of that government that have to incorporate legacy elements or continuance of government's elements that are so far down the road of corruption now, it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is why you have people campaigning for small government. So you really have freedoms to do things. You also need an element of, like, you know, people say get rid of the police. Like, well, that's kind of lawlessness. And we're seeing that in California, where the police don't turn up unless someone steals $250 from a store. Like, you know, there's a lack of accountability. And so I understand where you're coming from, Cortec, but it's not a black and white type of issue, because you kind of need, you know, like in the Wild West, you'd still have a posse get together and hunt down thieves, and watching a lot of Yellowstone.
All my analogies tonight are going to be Wild West. There's a guy called Gregory Sams, and you know, I think everyone's in the paradigm of thinking, you know, what we need is a different type of government. Gregory Sams is a guy who kind of brought the veggie burger into the United States the first time, and really interesting guy. But he's got a, you know, another book called The State is Out of Date, where he just documents all the things, you know, every single time the government has a hand in anything, it makes it worse. Every single time he documents all the things and successes that have come about and industries that have come about without this silent kind of governmental control. Mm. And the fact that we, you know, it is not a, we have to have this, we just need to make it work conversation. There are different models and there are different ways of doing things without this whole city of corrupt criminals.
It's the corrupt criminals, and it's been over the Federal Reserve since 1913, and it's centuries old. There's a Simpson episode where a feel-good type guy, he listen to your inner child and do what you want and feel what do what you feel what you should do. And you find out, like, they, I think Otto was supposed to build a stand for 200 people, but he didn't build it that well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so that's sort of where I'm coming from, where, I mean, we mentioned building codes. There's a, now, the idea of having a building code, it's so you don't have destruction and accidents and death.
Yeah.
But you add the corruption in it, and then you're right, Cortec, where it's like, well, this is just ridiculous. Where I'm not sure about New South Wales, but here in Victoria, you need a permit to collect rainwater because the government believes that 6 feet above your house, it's their water.
Oh, my goodness.
Or something ridiculous like that, or 6 feet below. It's that whole
Do you own the land below your house kind of argument?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's like, so if I put a bucket out in my backyard when it's raining, will I get arrested?
Just breaking the law again.
The metal god sings again. And I like that, heavy metal's homophobic. Yeah, the singer of Judas Priest is gay. And he came out in 1990. No one noticed it. I mean, he was the one that dressed in leather and came out on a big bike for 15 years. But hey, it's the same. And, it's like, uh-huh, okay. And so, there's that perception of, misogynistic and heavy metal. No, just Priest still tour. I mean, Rob Halford is 103. And still sings like a mother lover. It's so weird.
I saw Iron Maiden at a concert. I grew up now, never really listening to them, and then went, and it was like metal pop. It was, and they're the best stage show too. It was awesome.
Oh, Maiden's awesome.
So it was also kind of put off back in the day when they were coming out by your metalheads, writing Iron Maiden on their canvas bags and all the scroll and stuff. I never actually listened to it, But it was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's the it's heavy metal, part of metal, where it's just it's hard rock, and it's all melody and there's gallops, and most of the metal genre is heavier than Iron Maiden, and there's a band here in Melbourne called Tism, This Is Serious Mum, and they have a song called Play Mistral For Me. And if you remember those Mistral fans that kept Catching on Fire?
No. Mistral's a band, is it?
No, it's a company that makes fans and air conditioners.
Okay.
And they had a problem where you would leave the fan going or the heater going and it will catch on fire and burn your house down.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, like late 80s, early 90s. And so Tism, with their sense of humor, Play Mistral For Me is a play on the Clint Eastwood movie Play Misty For Me, which is basically about a stalker and a radio DJ. Clint's the radio DJ. So Play Mistral For Me, and the running gag as the chorus is you're only as good as a Mistral employee once told me, you're only as good as your fans. Hey. And so, like, the fans of Iron Maiden that you met, I'm sure the band probably don't really want to meet. But you don't know what your fans, you never know what fans you're going to get.
Yeah, well, this is back in early high school days. Everyone's got their, you got your metalheads, canvas bags I'd made and scrawled on it. That was about as kind of threatening as it got.
Oh, yeah. The first time I heard Metallica was in a maths class in 1986 before I even know who they were. See, the dog agrees.
Three dogs for yes metal.
Yeah. I mean, that's the 80s as well. Like, Judas Priest were actually sued because two of their fans tried to kill themselves because they believed there was subliminal messaging, backward subliminal messaging in it that said, do it, do it. And they two shot their selves in the head with a shotgun. One died, one survived horrifically, and then died later on with complications. Even Bill Hicks, he got to Bill Hicks and he made a routine about it. And the question is, which artist wants their audience dead? Like, you know,
yeah, exactly. You
know, oh, we've got our new album; it's going to sell millions, but we're telling everyone to kill themselves. Like, that's not gonna, that's not repeat customer service.
Yeah, which artist wants their consumers dead? No,
and
I rest my case.
Yeah, and so Priest were put on trial. I think it was 88, 89, and eventually it was thrown out because there was no proof. You would listen; they'd listen to the song in court. And it sounded, instead of like, do it, do it, it sounded like the question, do you want a peppermint?
Yes, please. And everyone offers you one, just take it.
Yeah. So if you see Bill Hicks do that routine, it's quite, you know, if you play this song backwards, you can hear Satan is Lord, Satan is Lord. It's like, you're ruining my stereo. Stop that.
I did get Stairway to Heaven on a record player backwards, and if you choose the verse, there are two paths you can go by and run that backwards. It goes, whose power is Satan? It says something. It does. You can do that at home.
Well, the stuff with that backwards messaging, 80% of it is, at least 50% of it is, you're filling in the blanks. Some of it stands out occasionally, but other times it's like, well, I think it says that.
I could say that if I squint my eyes.
Yeah, and who knows, with the way that the English language is formed and the way the educational system is, where I think the idea is like it's what the subconscious is actually saying. And I'm sure if you listen to Barack Obama, it's probably his subconscious. But, you know, the three of us say the same sentence, but with intent and integrity. It could sound like that, but we have no meaning behind it because that's not our intent. You know what I mean? So,
remember 2 years ago where we heard of people getting tested for cough disease, and they really thought people were shoving things far too far up their nose? Apparently, scientists have now pinpointed exactly where in your nose COVID slips in, and it's probably that point that they were trying to bust open before. By shoving them right up there. The choirs, but science has said, we know where it gets in now. We can just cover that up and you can't get in. But it's like, well, you know, that's what you're trying to bust open when you're giving people the tests over.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Like, are they going to try and ramp up and have lockdowns with this new variant? Have you seen what Jimmy Kimmel has recently done?
What did he do?
No, not Kimmel. Who did the Tonight Show? Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
He basically did a parody of Love Shack by the B-52s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically talking about the new variant. And it's really, like, he's performing it quite well. But if you look at his eyes, he looks dead inside. It's pure cringe, if you've seen the video at all.
Is it supposed to be publicity for a new variant? So.
Well, you know how, I mean, Stephen Colbert did those routines where, you know, people dressed as syringes came out, and they're just pushing that, you know.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's that level of cringe of, like, we need to, you know, save the planet, don't be selfish, everyone get injected. But there are people that are, because it's are reacting badly to it. Sports people, because the sports people are pushing their bodies high, it's accentuating the heart defects. A CNN reporter had a stroke on air.
Oh,
yeah, and it's. I don't think it could be like 5-10% of the people that had the vaccine. They're going to have this kind of problem. The interesting part is the narrative is we don't know why everyone is having all these heart problems, and it's definitely not that thing that we can't talk about.
Well, it seems like something else I saw recently was the, with everything that we know, and I mean, with all with everything that's going on, I think everyone just has to believe, I mean, remember to breathe properly. And a lot of times, even just breathing properly can get you through these things. But, you know, in the West, we generally are considered shallow breathers and don't really breathe properly. But we should remember to do that if you feel anything kind of physical like that, because there's a lot going on. But there was this article about how the stats are getting reported. Like, even though it's completely obvious, they're still getting reported like it was the right thing to do, even though the stats say that people who hadn't got vaccinated at all, you know, had died less during that whole period. It's just weirdness, like with the Victor writing history and writing and taking it down wrongly. A stenographer with a wonky eye or something.
Oh, yeah, which I think is, was it a Dave Chappelle sketch where you could, you know, buy your own, like, little person stenographer? And so it will help with arguments. Yeah, on the backpack as well. Yeah, have your own stenographer with you, and that will save time with arguments and memory. It's like, no, look, you said this here.
I thought that was funny.
We are halfway through Planet Collingwood here on Studio A on Revolution Radio. My name's Monty Dean. We shall return after these brief messages, and we shall continue on talking, because it's a talk show. So, yeah. See you soon. Back for part two of Planet Collingwood here on Revolution Radio Studio A. We'll be going for another hour. I'll slowly melt into the sunset, literally and figuratively, because as the sun goes down, hopefully it gets colder, because it is 32 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, I actually looked that up, Monty. That's only 89. It's not 100, man.
Okay.
32 degrees Celsius is 89.6 Fahrenheit. Which is hot. I mean, it's let's call it 90. Let's round up, but it's not fry an egg on your hood of your car hot. You know what I mean?
Well, no, but it is compared to like the day beforehand when it was 22, and for the next 3 days it's going to be. I think on Saturday it's going to get to 38 or 39 degrees Celsius.
When I lived in Taiwan, it would sometimes get up to 40 with the Humidex and everything, and.
Yeah.
All of us who are not native to that place, like all of the expat English teachers, we all would get this like insane insomnia. You can't sleep when it's that hot. Mm-hmm. You'd see people dragging themselves into the bushi bands, the cram schools, the bags under their eye. Hey, man, you don't have air conditioning? No, man, I haven't slept for 3 nights.
Yeah, it's like, oh, Australians are lazy. It's like, no, it's the land. It's like, we should move slowly. Yeah, we should do something. Yeah, but in this heat, we're moving slowly. it's part of the land. It's we're laconic, not really lazy. And it's mainly because, like, you know, if you have 4 days of over 40 degrees heat, it's like, do you want to do anything? And that's with the air conditioning on and everything else like that. It's you have to acclimate the body to it. And so it's like, Bruce, your son visiting you during the Northern Hemisphere winter. You'll have probably a body shock for about 3 days coming from Canada to Costa Rica, because the body's like, what are you doing? I was trying to stay warm, and now I'm just – my bones were frozen, and now they're melting. So that's right, yes. Yeah. So if you enjoyed the last hour, go to freemslips.com and click on the Patreon button and give what you can. We're 100% listener-supported, and that's why we're still on air in year 12. Because we started January 1st, 2011. Oh, wow. That's a lifetime ago. Or three. So, 2023, we're day 11. How's everyone going?
No, I'm liking it so far, man. Like, I'm having a good 2023. My biggest worry was finance, and that seems to be really going well. Harvest is starting this week. I have two tech writing jobs. Everything's going good. I bought another TV today, man, in anticipation of this as of yet undelivered UPS catastrophe with the MacBook Pro. But I took Jimmy Jean. I'm sorry, Kartek?
I was going to ask how that's going.
Should be in any day, man. But believe me, there's going to be a brilliantly written letter to customer service at UPS. And I'm either going to get credit or a refund, man. Because, I mean, I paid $4.50 Canadian, which is about $4.75 Australian. It left Canada December 5th. I don't have it yet. It went to five different cities in like 30 hours. And then, you know, all the final North American city being Miami. Then it hit San Jose, Costa Rica, and it's been there ever since. So, you know, but I bought a 32-inch smart TV because the graphics is so good on a Mac. You can just use an HDMI cord with a TV. And so I bought that today in anticipation of it coming in, and I can hardly wait. Plus, I want to get back to reading, and there's an iPad as well, so... But other than that, 2023 has been pretty good for me. I see some hardship around me. I'm reading about it. Crime's going up in Costa Rica big time. Like really brazen stuff now. Like stuff you just see in the U.S. You see these videos now. Guys, just one guy, like just walking in to like a grocery store, pulling out a gun, and robbing all the cashiers and everyone in line. It's like the two actors, Amanda Plummer and Roth, in the beginning of Pulp Fiction, robbing the diner, you know. And I never saw that stuff over here before. And according to the news, it's not normal. But people get hungry. They get a little bit crazy, right?
Yes, yeah, there's that knock-on effect where the cost of living goes through the roof, and where food becomes a luxury, everyone gets a bit narky.
Did you see Brazil?
I had a question.
Okay.
Yeah, what's happening in Brazil?
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone to complain, a whole bunch of people just storm the government.
It seems like
the same patterns, doesn't it?
I'm gonna go with the Pelosi response. It's an insurrection.
did they or did they not have like an identical guy with horns on, but a Brazil version?
I did see that photo, but it was photoshopped.
Oh, just check. Okay. There's a lot of people unhappy with that, and that just says to me that, you know. Somewhere, and then you read the history of the guy that got deposed, and he's like a hero, national hero, you know, all the things that he's done, and you can understand why people get a bit antsy, I guess.
So Monty alluded to the awakening earlier, and I do believe there is going to be an awakening. I'm not sure it's going to cure everything, because I mean, you can be multidimensional and still be a bad person. But what Team Dark would want to do is they would want to create as much self-doubt, confusion, and institutionalize or narcotize as much people as possible. Call it madness, call it this, call it that. And one of the ways you would do that, I mean, there's such a flood, such a torrent of information now that it's very difficult to discern what's going on and what's true. And even more difficult to try to express your truth in any form of social media, because everybody just has their program. If the program was like liquid cement a year ago, that cement's hardened now. And whatever handprint got put in there, it's not coming out, right? So if you're on the left, you're on the left. If you're on the right, you're on the right. There's a few people sort of independently talking about what's going on, but I mean, nobody listens to them. If you're not part of the animus now, if you're not part of the animosity now, and you haven't chosen a side, and you're not dug in at a solar plexus level with some kind of viciousness, there's just no point in commenting. I saw a pastor, a black U.S. pastor, make the most vicious and unkind comment about that black woman, Diamond and Silk, I forget which one died. I think it was Diamond. She passed. And just absolutely mocking her. And I thought, man, dude, you're a pastor. I mean, if you can't keep it together, what chance as anybody has, right?
Where's the compassion? I mean, watching 1923, and, oh, yeah, I'm not a fan of the church back then, the way that they treated the Native Americans. And
Yeah,
like, at one point, there's one scene, well, you're a savage. It's like, I'm thinking, you are, because you're beating the living crap out of her with a ruler. Who's savage here? I had another thought, which I've completely forgotten. Oh, well.
Minus the accent, that nun is pretty much my mom, Monty. She was actually a Carmelite nun before she got married. There's a little insight into your buddy, Bruce.
Ah, okay.
And everyone, I don't know what it is about the Catholic Church and ordained female initiates in a cloistered monastery, but they're all vicious and violent. You know, they're just vicious and violent. It's just incredible. I've never in my life met a decent nun. I was taught by them for one year at a high school I went to in Ottawa, and it was a Catholic, private Catholic high school. It was kind of a last resort before my parents asked me to leave the house. And I mean, those nuns were vicious. I mean, absolutely vicious. Like no love, no compassion. You're just, you know, everything is the devil. So as soon as you go to that, like DEFCON 1, the devil, then the only recourse is to beat the devil out of somebody, right? And, you know, you see that in Islam too, but they're just brutal, man. Just absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
That's a great character in 1923, man, that the Irish nun. That is just so perfect.
Yeah, but that was the thing. I mean, it's 100 years ago, but it's still the 20th century. And I would say you could see why the 30s was so, you had the Depression, then the only way that I think the United States got out of the Depression was when they got into the war. World War II changed everything, basically, and you can see that as well. I mean, the formation of Israel, the United Nations, the Brentwoods Agreement. That's when the British Empire changed its name, because Empire didn't really do well in Wyoming. It's like, oh, we're the Commonwealth now. And that's their slow decline as well, because America, from an economic point of view, they just made all these weapons. And someone in the Pentagon said, oh, well, to keep this going, we need to have an enemy. And they created the Cold War. And it is fascinating where the force of religion, those nuns, we're right and you're wrong. That's basically it. And, you know, yeah, it's like, well, hang on, isn't she God's creation as well? And the Native Americans refer to God as the Great Spirit. It's just a different way of how they get to it. But it's that European thing of like, oh, you live in tents and wander the land. It's like, yeah, we've been doing this for thousands of years. And, you know, we're happy with our lifestyle. Even here in here in Australia with the Aboriginals, they didn't invent the wheel. They didn't need to. They adapted and survived. And, you know, after 200 years of European occupation, yeah, we're not getting our bond back. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's going to be interesting this year as well. You've got the Voice, as you know, not the TV show, but they want to have a voice for Aboriginals in Parliament.
Yeah,
but that's it. We don't know exactly what it is. But the government and the lefties are saying, oh, we should do this. But what is it? Shut up.
That's an initiative. It's infrastructure.
Yeah, and that is actually one of the leftards. Like, the people on the left, they're mostly good people. Then you get the extreme nut jobs. They basically shut up about it. We just need it. And as my mum pointed out yesterday, and I was like, I wonder where I got my intelligent gene from. There's already a ministry for Aboriginal affairs. So why can't that be the voice for Aboriginals? Why do you need to pander and have someone else? I think also the Prime Minister from about 10, 15 years ago, there was an Aboriginal council that he disbanded. And so In hindsight, yeah, it's like, good idea, you wanker. He also sent us to war because he was actually in Washington on 9/11, if you remember that, Cortec.
You know, I think it's a step in the right direction, having someone in there and feeling represented, but in representation. Yeah. But it feels like half publicity stunt too.
Well, mostly it's virtue signaling because, okay, well, now we need the Jewish voice in there. We need the Polish voice. We need the Greeks. They need a voice as well. We need the it's basically because there's no treaty and they've treated the natives like utter crap for over two centuries. And there's a lot of bribery, like, oh, but we gave you all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but you still think we're second-class citizens. They're the only group in Australia that are marginalized compared to everyone else. You could be from Nairobi. You could be from Taiwan, West Taiwan, New Zealand, everywhere else like that. But if you're a native here, which is only 3% of the population, they're sort of just ostracized and pushed away. Yeah. But there are smart Aboriginal elders where it's like, no, we accept what happened in 1788, and ever since then, all of us have created the country that we're in today. We're all Australians.
So there's another dimension. You just cued me there. There's another dimension to the whole atrophy theory. There is absolutely a baseline in nature that keeps you sane. And as we've gone into our man-made bubble in the Industrial Revolution, and we're about to go into the Fourth Industrial Revolution, which is a further form of consolidated solipsism. The natives are looking smarter and smarter. And I've thought this many times up on this mountain dealing with the Quebecer. You know, what do they really think of us? I mean, they must think we're completely nuts. Because, I mean, they have all of the primary consciousness of a normal human being. You know, they can exist in non-duality. One of the fascinating things about Native people is how still they can be. Just sit with their families. No TV, no radio, no electricity. Just have a fire going in a wood yurt with a conical roof, banana leaf roof, and just sit cross-legged on the floor and just be with each other for 4 or 5 hours. I mean, we pay $4,700 to do that for 5 days and call it a retreat, and we can barely do it. We do it for 15 minutes and we're out telling and posting on Instagram about our spiritual retreat, you know. And it just seems to me that we're going in a very bad direction, and a very, very bad direction. And I don't know if there's a turnaround point. I don't know if anything is going to stop this, any awakening, anything, except maybe just a rollback to, I don't know, like post-flood rollback, where maybe 5% of the population made it through. And they say the remnants were Turkey, Scotland, and Tibet were the three remnant populations after the last cataclysm. So, hey, look, I'm not trying to be morbid. I always say, ultimately, we're going into a better time. It's just understanding what a reset of this nature is. And it is a spiritual reset. And the negative just tries to mimic it because that's all they can do. You know, they're the conscious shadow. And so they're actually the best voice on what's coming because they're trying to mimic it. That is what's coming. It is a complete system reset. A lot of the conceptual paradigms they've created to herd us, like climate change and things like that, are intellectually baseless. But the general idea that we need a redirect is not baseless. We can't keep consuming at this level. We can't keep cutting down massive square kilometers of Brazilian rainforest. So McDonald's can have grazing land for their cattle. You know, it can't go on this way. We can't cut down all the trees. We can't pollute all the rivers. I mean, something has to change. And I don't think anybody has a solution except, you know, the desperate measures in play now, like the medicine and stuff like this, which is what we think it is. But I'm starting to wonder if, you know, maybe something like that isn't necessary. And I'm not, you know, to quote the Rolling Stones, showing sympathy for the devil here, but what other options are there? I mean, can we go to 16 billion people, everybody driving a Ford F-150 and having a 50-inch flat screen TV? And can we do that?
Technically, yes. Will we get there? No. But we're under bad management on a simple thing where I won't go into my usual rant because I sound like I'm repeating myself, but I'll just give one example. Everything that oil creates is replaced by hemp. What would that do?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of the fun part of having these conversations is like some of the answers are that simple. Well, but the controlling mechanism where they, because like the bad managers still want to stay in power, and so their options to their solutions to the problem they've created is just going to make more problems. Go ahead, Cortec.
Yeah, no, along those lines, people have been talking about mycelium as a packaging material to replace cardboard, and you know, it's another one of those wonder natural things that do everything the more we look into it.
So I mean the principle of entrepreneurship has, you know, it went away after World War II. Everything that's come out was really, it's really DARPA is running the economy when you look at it. I mean, the internet, the computer, everything is DARPA, right? And where we do see original human genius like water engines and things like that, we see either a buyout or a mysterious accident, right? So it's been sabotaged for like 75 years. And the question then becomes, why is a change going to be possible now? I mean, I don't think there is going to be a change. So I go back to my fallback position, which is my working theory for what's going on the planet. So they're going to try to reseat power in the West in Jerusalem, and it's already starting. I sent you an article, Monty. I sent it to a few people. I think, Raz, I sent it to you. Cortec, I didn't send it to you. But Bibi got back in power, and he appointed a defense minister whose primary mission seems to take the Temple Mount, which is the only thing they gave back after the 67 war. Very interesting. And, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I mean, even Joe Biden said that the rhetoric surrounding the Temple Mount was very provocative and Israel needed to take two steps back. That's quite a chastisement from a U.S. president toward Israel. I don't think I've ever heard anything like that publicly. And when they say stuff publicly instead of privately, it's a different matter, right? Saying something publicly in the political space is a very deliberate thing. It's considered unfriendly in the world of international diplomacy.
Yeah, crackles.
So I think that they're going to try to reset religious consciousness and resurrect the old totems of the Abrahamic thought control system. And I think that they're going to have pseudo-miracles and a lot of black magic that will fool a lot of people into thinking that there is a religious or a spiritual experience happening. Again, it's just another form of mimicry, right? That's what the left does. So you got the technological left mimicking the reset, which is a spiritual reset, but socially, politically, and economically, the left can't properly mimic it because they're not in sync with it. And at this point in history, you're either in sync with the creator or you're not, because he seems to be coming in like a steamroller. And the Jerusalem crowd, which is a circle of people that is much larger than, you know, the people, the Jewish people. I'm not even sure they're running it at this point, but let's say it sails under the banner of Solomon. Okay. So that's happening. And why was I able to predict that? You know, because it's logical. Because it's not a psychic insight, it's a logical deduction based on the energies and what's at play and understanding how individual manifestation and collective manifestation happens. You know, if people think about something long enough, it's probably going to happen. Well, every time I get on this topic, have you noticed that, Cortec?
I don't know. Yeah, it does seem like something they want to achieve, and you know, go and achieve it and see if it changes anything for you. Hopefully it does. You know, but chances are, it'll just be the same old day the next day, and hopefully then maybe we can get past it and get on with some collaborations worldwide.
Well, you know, so I think that they're gonna achieve their plan, and the plan is clearly written, right? God bless them, they wrote it all down. You know, some people consider that a spoiler, but I watch my favorite TV shows over and over again, like True Detective season one. So, you know, what is it again? 2/3 of humanity will fall. So I think that's probably accurate. You know, it's already begun, and there's a delay on the medicine, by the way. The technology, which goes down to the level of DNA through ribonucleic acid, DNA being deoxyribonucleic acid, is a working technology. So it's not a toxin in the sense that if you consume arsenic, you're immediately going to feel the effect very shortly after consuming it, minutes after consuming it. This is a working technology that becomes more dangerous the longer it's in the body, and it reproduces, and the higher the quantity of it in the body, hence the boosters. Going back to what you said earlier, Monty, about is there going to be another lockdown in 2023? I don't know about a lockdown, but they're not done their medical campaign yet. I mean, they literally want everybody vaccinated. I mean, you know, Klaus Schwab says, and I quote, nobody is safe until everybody has the medicine.
Yeah, but he's crazy. I think they're done. You know, I think there's been some big changes in the last couple of years, and most of it is a lot of people asking themselves, are they happy doing what they're doing day in, day out? If they're not, why not? You know, a lot of people have just pushed that even further and got out of the cities, which is interesting. There's a lot of kind of people, you know, Japan has kind of said, we'll give you a whole bunch of money if you move out of Tokyo and all this kind of stuff. I'm just wondering why that was going on in the world. And then I read this other article that was saying, you know, China has just opened their doors recently from the biggest lockdown ever kind of thing. And there's a lot of people over there with money who just want to get out. I don't think that's the reason, but, you know, there's a lot of making people move around it. So.
Yeah, well, with China's special. I've heard someone describe the Chinese people, and I agree as well. It's brilliant. The Chinese people will put up with anything till they don't. Why a lot of Chinese people have left as well, especially with the money, because like they've accepted capitalism into their country to a point. And I think a lot of business people is like, you know, if I leave the country and say move to Australia, I could make more money and I won't have the CCP breathing down my neck as much.
Yeah, apparently Thailand's being marketed as the best place close to just move to. And they're all getting sweaty. As you would.
Yeah. I think he's frozen. There he is. You can earn money in China to a certain point, and that's when their government steps in and is like, now you'll work off for us. Because they can't have a free capitalism society because that goes against their ideology. Because it's, you know, for the people, for the party and all that type of stuff. But to survive in the world, they need to have capitalism. I mean, just look, everything, as Primer says, everything's made in China. And that's the crappy part of globalism, where instead of, remember Cortec? We used to actually have a car industry in this country.
Yeah, muscle cars.
Yeah, well, just cars. And so why can't every country be self-sustaining to a certain point and then compete with, like, you know, a Swedish automobile or a British automobile or an American? Apparently, American used to build good cars as well. But now in the false globalism that's being put forward, they try and make everyone, like Australia does wheat, China makes all of this, Korea does all cars and blah, 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 blah. And then you're independent on everything. And if you say have a beef with Korea, they'll stop sending you cars. There's that independence, so you can't break away. It's a controlling mechanism.
You can see how the idea kind of pushed further than it was supposed to be. Kind of all new power or ideas push further than they really should be settled before they come back and settle where they should be. And I think, you know, we see a lot of that in every single degree. Whether we're now, you know, whether it's the uptake of mobile phones when we know they're kind of harmful for you, you kind of, you, first of all, you see everyone with their face in their phones, and then you see that kind of taper off. You see people bringing back books or whatever like that. I think hopefully we can see when we've reached too far and pull back a bit. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
I don't know, because the system is so locked in now, right? That, I mean, you look at it from the perspective of a young person, you know, so I have the eyes of my son to look through. The pressure to double down on the viciousness of this society to try and make it and buy a house is very prevalent. It's not an easy task now to live as your fathers and grandfathers lived in the Western model. Now it's like we're becoming in a way a very dangerous society, because when you get into pushing
it's pushing a lot of relocation. That's what I see. A lot of people pushing a lot of people to, if they can't afford a house in the city, to relocate further and further out, or think about something in the country, or think about a farm. This kind of back and forth.
That is true. Yeah, that's a big thing going on in Japan now. A lot of people are, somebody mentioned it earlier, but
they're paying people, governments,
to go back and live in these villages and stuff like that. So yeah, there is land to go back to. And I think that's a good thing as well. I mean, decentralizing, people go a little crazy in large urban centers. It's nonstop stimuli. It's very, very difficult to stay in tune with yourself and to live harmoniously with that thing Lao Tzu called the way. But so it's a very, you know, difficult ship to turn around. It's, you know, like trying to turn the Titanic, you know. It is a very difficult thing to do because there's so much interlinking. I think one of the big things that's gone wrong in our society is that nobody really makes anything anymore. I mean, to an extent they do. Like, I mean, Mac makes a good computer. I'm waiting for one. but most people just make money now, right? I mean, look at the evolution of furniture. Okay, like 40, 50 years ago, when you bought furniture, it was solidly built by probably a family business that had been doing it for two or three generations. And they were furniture builders. They knew how to do tapestry. They knew how to do the springs, the woodwork. They knew how to do cabinetry and everything. Now it's IKEA. Now it's laminated press board and yeah, it's nice and everything. And maybe I'm making a small point out of nothing here, but I don't think so, because it's in everything now. You can see a gradual degradation of our art, you know, to the noise.
Yeah, I feel we must hit this point where we go, well, I'm just going to turn the computers off and go out into a field and sketch it with an HB pencil. You know, and rediscover and have a renaissance of being able to do that, not just how it is an end point to sell, because that's the least important bit. The bit is being involved in that art or jamming and playing music with those people and how that makes you feel. It doesn't matter if there's an end point to it. The joy is in the doing that stuff. That's how I feel.
I just figured out a clever way to succinctly say what I'm trying to say, you know, with, you know, Jerusalem and everything we have to go through. Collectively, we can't go to 5D until we go through 4D. And all of this 4D stuff is unresolved, right? Which is basically, in the West, it's the Abrahamic religions. These are very astral religions, okay? Very astral religions. I mean, Yahweh is, in my mind, undoubtedly an astral potentate, but very real, very real. Okay. So to get to the higher consciousness, we have to go through individually and collectively. And the two things are really the same. You know, it's like the inner and the outer are really the same thing when you start to understand what's going on with a human being. And so the individual and the collective are really the same thing in terms of this passage we have to go through. It's a little bit of a jazz riff on the old esoteric maxim, as above, so below, as within, so without. It's ways of showing unity and duality, right? So we have to go through 4D, and we're just beginning to go through that now. And part of that process is going to be something that will approximate a demonic invasion. And I think that
there's a lot of noise. My God.
Yeah, sorry,
super crazy. I get on this topic, like. How's that?
Crystal.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I heard it snap and pop into place there. Maybe I was dragging it a little bit, but so we have to go to 4D. We have to go through 4D, and that is, among other things, the realm of the boogeyman, right? So that has to be gone through collectively as well, because it's the only way we're going to exorcise all of the nonsense that people carry around in their belief systems and stuff. Is you have to externalize it, make it experiential, and then you let it go, right?
Aren't we there right now?
Hold on a sec. It's the same thing as the principle of healing trauma. You have to externalize it and then let it go. And so this process we haven't gone through yet. And a lot of very confused people, many of them at this radio station.
Yeah, you're completely right. There's a lot of healing that needs to happen. There's a lot of unresolved stuff, stepping back, you know, to 9/11, everything that's gone on since, that is just left unresolved. Left, you know, we have people from there and the wars that went on, and you know, people, leaders that should be behind bars due to, you know, if you have a look at any criminal law, but they're not.
Wasn't quite what I was talking about, but I'll go with that. Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah.
And no, I think the most growth we've had in the last 2 years has been a lot of people kind of ask themselves what makes them happy. And that's super important.
Yeah. So, I mean, this has yet to be gone through. And, it's a rite of passage. And there's a lot of people who'll be able to help people go through this. You know, there's a sufficient number of scouts, we'll call them, you know, or avant-garde people a little bit ahead of the primary troops, which would be the human collective here. So, you know, it's not impossible, but I don't know, the degradation in thinking, consciousness, and perception I see now is just, maybe that's part of the process, is that you have to go crazy before you can become sane, you know. And that seems to be, to my sensibilities, what we're going through now, at least as I observe the West, you know, digitally through my non-Mac computer.
I think we love a good challenge. And so, as usual, we've left it up until the last possible moment to make it more interesting.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's another thing we do as human beings, right? There's a great line from an old movie that I just love called, again, a highly underrated director, John Carpenter, you know, Big Trouble in Little China. But in this instance, I'm referring to one of his more serious movies, which was not a horror movie, which is not typical for John Carpenter. And I'm talking here about a movie he did called Starman with Jeff Bridges. And you guys seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah, great movie. There's that scene where,
I've seen it.
Yeah,
A lot of curly mullets going on, I think.
Yeah, you should download it and watch it again, Monty. It's actually a really fine movie. And it's aged really well. But he's summing up the human race in one exchange with the female lead of the movie, the human. And the extraterrestrial takes on the body of her dead husband by cloning it from hair that she had, a hair clipping that she had taped into a photo on memory album of her husband who had recently died. He's saying, you know, she's saying, are we going to make it as a race? Which is something, it seems to be a standard question that the human character asks the extraterrestrial in every one of these movies. The same thing with the remake of, you know, The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves, which was really just a remake of Starman, now that I think about it. But the thing he says positive about us, it's just stayed with me my whole life. It was such a great line. He said, the thing I admire about you human beings is that you're at your best when things are at their worst. So that's probably the most optimistic thing I can say about the next 5 years we have to go through. It's going to bring out the best in us, right? It's all part of an alchemical transformative process, or not so much alchemical, but the alchemy of circumstance and manifestation of timelines. I mean, we've created this confrontation, the conflagration between scientific discovery and the lagging weight of spiritually outdated religious beliefs. And so this sort of conflagration has to happen. Unfortunately, in the middle of it are a bunch of third parties that just want to exploit us. Mm. Some of them human and some of them not human. Than funny comedy show tonight.
Well said, also.
It's not my A material. I probably should have done an open mic on this before I aired it on Ring.
At least have a snare crash at the end.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. I think that's well said.
Yeah, but what is it? Hard times makes hard men and soft times makes soft men. I'm plagiarizing it. But humanity will step up to the challenge. Where we've had collapses before, from England, but when Rome finally collapsed, some people thought it was the end of the world, but that was 1500 years ago, and so there's a way that humanity still moves forward. That's a part of the thing of being on Earth, is compromise and you adapt. Depends on what level you want to compromise, which is, going back to the Chinese people. They compromise till they don't want to anymore. And what do they do? Like, when they had their emperors and their dynasties, things could go to pot for years, and then something just snaps, and they go, nope, and they kill him. It's like, nope, sorry, we blame you. Let's get another one.
Yeah, dangerous job, figureheads. Always has been.
Oh, yeah, well, apart from being egged, has anyone heard about the King of England?
No, it's been relatively quiet.
Yeah, his son's been a dick, but apart from that, with his new book and just, getting caught out with lies, and that's the
Daddy
fun part.
Daddy said I was a spare. No, Daddy probably said you were the product of that other guy with red hair.
But no, that is actually... That's been the thing for 1500 years. When a king is king, they have to marry, and they have to have two children, an heir and a spare, because that heir, you at least want someone, need that bloodline to continue. Henry VIII was the second child. The first one died. So Henry VIII was technically the spare. I can't remember the name of his brother who died before. But that's the idea, is you try and have as many kids. Like, look at Queen Victoria. She had, 9?
Yeah.
And that's basically it, to keep the bloodline going and the element of control. Watching The Crown, you realize that they're just a figurehead and they're placeholders. Queen Elizabeth II was the longest running monarch. But it's the crown that actually, and the palace that controls everything. And it's forced by tradition. And tradition is peer pressure from dead people.
Monty, have you watched that miniseries on Netflix about is it Harry and Meghan?
No, I haven't watched it because she's just a very awful human being.
Oh, God, yeah. She's got to be the most oppressed quatroon in the history of biracial oppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like, oh, they treat me like this. It's like, well, yeah, you're marrying a prince of the famous royal family on the planet. You didn't really. And did Harry talk about his mum at all? Yeah. And what she went through?
Like, you're lucky you're still alive.
Yeah. It's like you didn't think this could happen. I mean, obviously, you won't be pushed into a pylon in Paris. But the way she's going, I'm sure a lot of people want to push her into a pylon in Paris. Sorry, I'm just thinking of all those very un-PC jokes now. It's like when she had that, did you see parts of the interview they did with Oprah?
No.
Definitely not.
Well, you basically got a billionaire talking to multimillionaires and they're complaining about life.
Yeah. Cry me a,
There was a great meme of just the three of them sitting outside on the porch, whatever, you know, a luxury porch, and someone photoshopped in stacks of money, like in The Dark Knight, just before the Joker burns it all. It's like, isn't life tough? Oh, I know.
I know.
Yeah. And it's just like she's completely there's another meme of a journalist asking Harry, so do you think your wife dominates you? And Megan goes, no, she doesn't. And you can sometimes just see him staring off into the 1,000-yard stare of, what did I do? Well, I've made a terrible mistake.
Oh, mummy, aren't you here still?
Do you think this is staged?
Not as much as that the fried Bankman FTX scandal, where he's now got $450 million in some account that he's calling Robin Hood. I mean, this is the Bankman. This is the fried Bankman. Is his name not enough just for everyone just to go, this is just some kind of show against crypto or something? Something's weird going on. He's got $450 in this other account that's called like a Robin Hood. It's called, you know, the name of it is Robin Hood. Like, you know, we should let him have that because he'll do something good with the money. No, he should kind of give that money back, and he should probably go to jail for a long time.
I wouldn't say like Meghan and what's his name, Harry's staged, but some element of it certainly is, like the emasculation of Harry, you know, portraying Meghan as a sort of dominant feminine figure. I mean, all the videos we've seen in the last couple of years was sort of pinpointed just that. And Paul Joseph Watson talked about it a lot, how Harry went from being this, you know, man and was well loved to now he's this little thing, you know, scurrying behind Meghan. Even in photos, he's standing behind. Body language is quite something right there. They're using these two as the next generation biracial couple, as a sort of advertisement and a sort of model couple where the man is submissive and the female is dominant. There's definitely elements of those. I know it's not working, but you'll be amazed how many people obey everything TV tells them. 80% of the planet.
No,
but a large percent. Oh yes, it does. I mean, just go read Stanley Milgram, his research, and he'll tell you 80% of them can't even make critical decision making skills. People will tell you, I don't believe what's happening on TV, but subconsciously they do absorb their behaviors. They do pay attention to those behaviors, and sooner or later the human herd animal instinct kicks in, and they start operating like one another. These things happen.
It's true. You're completely correct.
Mm. Yeah.
Also, you got a shit rating on Netflix.
Well, that's the yeah, and the truth finally comes out. Yes.
Yeah. Poor little rich boy, cry me a river.
Simply because people right now, I'm seeing this trend on Netflix and TV in general. People really do not want that same old superhero or non-positive, full of what they call wokeness, because wokeness is now made its way into our parlance, which was once an ebonics African-American term, now is a full-blown normal, you know, English term. Anyway, people really do not want that, and something like Puss in Boots is well-received these days. People are loving it.
Escapism.
Yeah, they want a good story. Yeah.
There's no wokeness. It's a simple story about a cat going for a character arc. And it somehow mugs all those superhero movies out there. It's like, wow.
Yeah, it got to the point where just a simple children's story is more intelligent and has gravity and integrity than all the virtual signaling crap.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure with a cat they can't fit in homosexuality, the Ukraine, or anything else.
Yeah, there was more bond and familial bond and emotion between the Free Bears and Goldie than the entirety of Wakanda.
Yeah, I got halfway through Wakanda. I downloaded one with Spanish subtitles, so I'm waiting for English subtitles. But the halfway through, I'm like, okay, this is just it's a bad version of Enya. Steve Hughes points out that Enya is like coloring in silence, because that's what Enya does. Enya is more exciting than Wakanda.
Well, cripes, I haven't tried yet. Seem to be cams all the way so far.
Well, apparently She-Hulk has been cancelled, season 2.
Well, there's something to lift our spirits, isn't it? Hey?
Yeah, doesn't surprise me at all.
No, that was.
But also, you can see idea. You can see why Yellowstone is going through the roof, because it's just written so well, and it's soap opera writing where something happens and everything goes wrong, and it's just drama and storytelling. But because of the insanity and the wokeness and the divide that's happening, and the wokeness is leaked into the entertainment, people don't want to be reminded of what's going on.
Maybe people are choosing shows that aren't in any possible way being able to connect it or have those influences put into them.
Well, remember in the last 3 years, all this show's about Trump's America. I'm like, well, he left office. Why are you making a show about Trump's? Like, why? And also, we're in Trump's America. Why do we care about watching another show pointing it out? It's like, really? Just, you know, and that's the other thing. Like, people say, oh, Doctor Who's been woke forever. And it's like, well, no, they used allegory. They could use the same type of subjects, but it was buried in a story. And the viewer, using their intelligence, would make the connections. And so, like, well, yeah, polluting is bad. But there's a story about it explaining, the character arc and plot and everything else like that. And, you know, part of the set piece is polluting is bad. Now, when you watch a Doctor Who episode, that's it in the entire – polluting is bad. Yeah, and you know, can we have, like, you know, character building, world building, plot, an exchange of words, something?
I'll tell you, I've switched completely to Korean. And every time I watch a Korean TV show, there's like this Elrond Gandalf conversation exchange in my head where one of them goes, why TV show has failed? They are weak. We must put our faith in Korean TV shows. Like,
I was there, Gandalf, like, 3,000 years ago when there were stories to tell.
I was there in the theater, Gandalf, when The Force Awakened aired. It's really, really true, because when you watch these Korean shows, they're beautiful people. They have a lot of Western integration in them. I mean, they integrated it well. They kept their Buddhism. They kept their culture. They kept a lot of their things going. And they write stories well. Here's a good example. I'm currently watching a TV show called Attorney Woo something, Extraordinary Attorney Woo. And it's about this autistic girl who becomes a lawyer. And one, they managed to do a story about an autistic girl without being too overtly woke about it. Actually, there's no wokeness. The acting is perfect. And they managed to write law cases, which is something She-Hulk couldn't do. She-Hulk couldn't write law cases. The writer said it. We don't know anything about it. We can't write that. So we decided not to make it a sort of law show about She-Hulk's life, and instead just decided to go around bashing men. It's quite something watching these Korean shows. Their historical movies are very good.
Depth. The Hulk really didn't have that much depth. I really don't know why they would choose one and just put a female in the boots and think they were going to do well with it. It's crazy.
There's something people have to understand in this day and age that's going on. It's called demoralization. And She-Hulk is very much the demoralization and humiliation factor going on. This is them humiliating you for liking something. This is them telling you, you like this, we're going to destroy it. And they've done that a lot. It's not just wokeness. There's clearly something going on in the background that's doing that. And this is something...
Destroy the idols. Destroy the idols, and all you've got left is the government. You know?
Well, being in Hollywood, there's the divide.
It's
not the
idol. It's something that is tethered in the culture, that's rooted in Western culture. They will try to ferret that out and destroy it. And Dalrymple pointed that out in communist cultures... they like to demoralize you by humiliating aspects things you like. Of your culture.
We've got a list of top 10, you know, things that the culture thinks is, you know, great, and government's coming in at about number 7. So we've got six things we've got to destroy in this year.
Yeah, I saw someone was having a go at Gina Carano's latest project, where it only made $800. It only made $800 in the theaters, and everyone pointed out, yeah, it was on a streaming service, you knob. Like, it's just,
also it's an old Western. Most of the Zoomers won't understand it anyway.
Oh no,
it's a callback to the old style.
Yeah, and I think Yellowstone is helping with that because it's so popular, and Westerns are easy to film because you just go out the West and point a camera at something. So you may see a resurgence of the Westerns because budget-wise, they're not that. However, apparently 1923's episodes are at least $35 million each.
So, wow.
Yeah, glad to have the money. We are coming up to the end of Planet Collingwood. Mr. McDonald has gone to Nine-Eye Land. Thank you for being here, Bruce. So, Cortec and Raz, any final thoughts for our fabulous listeners? Nearly said viewers, but it's an audio medium. I keep forgetting that.
This is 2023, so mathematically 2024 will follow. Dream the dream of peace. That's the only thing I will say to the whole of 2023 for the next 50 weeks from now on. I will keep on saying that. Dream the dream of peace. Every single one of you will dream your own dream of peace, your own variant of it. But do dream the dream of peace, because this isn't the time for us to go out there and bash people. Just stay at home and dream. It should be easy. I can't think of anything easier.
Create your own dream bubble and ignore the global narrative. Well, not ignore, but don't entangle in the global narrative. You can observe it, but dream that. What's your grand dream and create that?
Picture your idea like 2050.
Yeah. Thank you, Cortec. And breathe. And Cortec in for the comments from the Super Coach. That was Planet Collingwood. This is Studio A on Revolution Radio. We'll be back next week. Hopefully I'll survive the heat. You take care, everyone. I love you from afar, and let's keep it that way. See you soon. Bye.